When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
That's what I'm talking about. Knife talk, you fuckers. This is a podcast for, you know, all of you. Knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, makers, blacksmiths, bladesmiths. It don't matter. This is knife talk. We come at you once a week. At least once a week. Once a week is enough. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives, here with Mareko Momasi, Momasi Fire Arts, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. Fucking guys, what's going on? How's everybody?
Tired. Very tired. My little shit of a son decided he doesn't want to sleep anymore. And we've had three days of basically non-sleep. And my wife and I, we're hanging off the edge of the cliff at the moment. We are done. We're just like, oh.
He used to be my lovely buddy, the beautiful buddy. I love buddy, my buddy. Now that little shit.
The thing is, he is still just so happy.
Yeah.
He's happy, but he's just not sleeping. And you can't leave him alone for a second because he's everywhere at the moment, you know? And oh my God, I am absolutely knackered.
Well,
absolutely. To the point where we've had builders in again, and I basically nearly told them all to fuck off and leave today because I was just so short-tempered. I'm walking around the house like jogging pants and a big baggy white. I'm like Eminem in the 90s.
Oh, nice.
You know, an old version, a big baggy white t-shirt, but I've got like vomit all over me and I'm just like bags under my eyes. Oh, it's not good. It's not a good look to be shouting at builders.
Fucking great. There would be nothing worse. Then you're a French builder. You go home. You see your wife says to you, "Why are you home so early?" "I got fired today." "Why?" "Because my fucking boss's kid kept him up all night." It's terrible.
Honestly, it's been 3 days. I don't know how he's doing it. It's yeah. He must have some stash of speed somewhere, I'm sure. He's on something. He's got to be. It's
interesting. No naps or anything?
No. I was just telling Jeff before we went on air, the last 24 hours, I think he's had about 4 hours sleep.
Oh,
in the last 20. Like last night, he did 40 minutes through the night. That's all. Just 40 minutes.
40
is
minutes?
Cutting, is he cutting teeth?
I don't think so. He's got like a full mouth of teeth. That's okay. A phrase, I think, isn't it? So I don't think he's cutting teeth, but he doesn't seem to be in pain. He's just wide awake. It's just, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. Yeah, we do. When we had the twins, having the two of them was a breeze, an absolute breeze. They slept. This one, he is just fucking trouble. Yeah, so that's been my last few days. Mareko, how about yourself?
I am just sliding in here. And sharpening was a pain. This week is my sharpening week, and I was trying to spread it out because I have a tendency for my back to get pretty messed up, and I got behind. And so this morning, just before coming in here, I was finishing those up because I have to drop them off today. Right after we finish recording.
So wait a second. So you're sharpening for a sharpening service?
Yes, so it's my sharpening service I offer. And yeah, so And it's just like through a local kitchen store. People, and the way I have it set up is people drop off knives there. I pick them up, sharpen them, bring them back, drop them off. And then they pick them up. And so, yeah, but I just got behind and now my back's fucking killing me. I also went razor clamming the other day with the kid, and my mom and her husband are in town. So we all went out to the beach. It was a beautiful day. So that was great, except for it's, you know, the digging is just hard on the body too. So that added to it. So I just, I apologize, you guys.
Don't apologize, it's fine.
We're both broken, Jeff. What about yourself?
You had a rough time with the old clam gun. I understand. Don't worry about it. Fucking, did you get any clams to clam gun?
Yeah, we banged out 20 clams.
Hey, girl, watch out. Fucking, wow.
No wonder you're tired.
Your parents were there? Wow. It was crazy. Oh, geez, Louise. I mean,
you clam banger.
This is going to be a bad one, guys. We're going to fuck around.
Yeah.
So, you, how many clams do you think you banged? You fucking got.
20.
Wow.
So it's 15. It's a 15 limit, and kids even count. And if they're under 15, then you can help them with the digging. And the last time I went clam digging, I was like, this is going to be awesome. We're going to both limit out. We have tons of clams. And I didn't take into account just how much work that is to clean all of those clams. And you guys saw, like, awesome. I was just talking about, I shared pictures with you.
Jeez, I have nightmares about that picture.
I think I saw that fucking picture on OnlyFans.
And so this time I got my limit, and then we just kind of took it easy with the kid. Every once in a while, he's like, I want to try another one. And I was like, all right, cool. So he got 5. I got 15. My mother's husband got 15 clams too. It was a fucking gorgeous day. It was like mid-low 50s, blue skies, sun was setting just over the horizon, or just above the horizon as we were leaving the beach. It was beautiful. So, but yeah.
How many knives did you have to sharpen this week?
Oh my God. Like 40? I sharpened my first Ginsu's today.
Sweet.
Yesterday.
That's awesome. How is it?
They're shitty. They're all fucking serrated.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
They're a fucking nightmare.
That'd be a great picture with you holding up that Ginsu.
Oh yeah. Love my Ginsus. There's probably 100 knives.
Are you kidding? Oh, wow. Fucking 100 knives?
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably. How long do you have to do it all?
What do you mean? So I pick up the knives on Sunday, sometimes Monday, and then I drop them off on Thursday.
So how long did it take for them to have 100 knives squared away?
So they start taking knives like a couple weeks before I actually come and pick them up.
And oh, so people, my God. Yeah. So it's like we showing up with a barrel full of knives. It's just like, are you just miserable or are you fucking miserable?
No. I mean, I got to put on a good face because I offer like a little knife care Q&A kind of whatever session. Because the store closes at 4. I get there at 3. And so whoever has any questions or wants to understand knife care better, I chat with them. I set a record last month with 4 people
who attended the thing.
Up to that point, it's only been 1. I think the first one there was nobody.
Perfect.
It was great. Yeah. So but it's easy. It's just like me trying to be like part of the community and my local community here and helping people out and help people better understand knives. And I think I'm gonna be setting up something with the local culinary program at the local community college.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Just go talk knife care and maybe get some knife sharpening customers. So
nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
How about you, Jeff? How you been this last week?
Well,
you're sour right now.
You're so nice and you offer these things and I don't want to offer anything. The two things I have to do, I'm doing them under protest and I'm fucking not happy about it. The first one is going to be just me being shitty. And the second one will be shitty into knife making. So just, I got a message and I'm going to be vague and God bless whoever this person is. But I swear to God, if you try, don't don't ask for things from me. And when I say don't ask for things, I don't want to be in part of your collaboration, and I don't want to be, and I don't want to help your, I don't want to help you. I mean, I don't want to help you with things. I don't want to give you physical things to help you or someone else. How do I say this? I get
guilt you into it.
I get fucking. They hock me in China sometimes, and then they give me the guilt trip to help. You know, name your whatever, and then it just gets. It's so hard to say no, and I just want to say no, and I'm probably not going to say no. So if I am ever giving something for some sort of help or some sort of charity, know that I'm not. I'm doing it under duress, honestly. I mean, not doing
it. It's not out of the kindness of your heart.
It is not out of the kindness of my heart. I resent it thoroughly. So, like, and if you know me and you ask me to help somehow, I fucking do enough. I resent you for asking me. That's number one. I'll do it, but I ain't going to like it. So I got this goddamn, I'm going to end up having to do this goddamn thing that I don't want to do. I told Craig about it. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it. But I'm going to resent it the whole fucking time. So do yourself a favor. Don't fucking get my DMs and hit me up for shit. I've done enough. That's number one. I've done enough. Goddamn you.
Aren't you just sitting around doing nothing, though, waiting for people to ask you to help them?
I do enough. I'm going to tell you, I was involved with this goddamn, and this is not it, but this is, this goddamn hearing loss center that I'm saluting. I've been donating with them every year, and they asked me to come to this auction, and
they don't listen to the show.
You motherfucker! That's perfect! No, they don't. They're fucking good. Right. They're not listening to this one. God damn them. So you fucking got me. That was fucking perfect. They're not listening to this one. No, they're not. So fucking got me good. That would rattle my fucking cage right there. So I would donate a knife for this auction. And it was a friend of mine and his brother-in-law. They would, every single time, they would win the bids. And the bids would be... I was just like, what the fuck are these guys? Every other year, it's one of them and the other one. And then I realized that they were just winning because they could get one of my knives and just write the whole fucking thing off by putting it with this goddamn... You know, it was almost like I was waiting for... At one point, one guy was just like, hey, maybe this year you could put in like a, you know, like an 8-inch K-tip, but maybe just do it like with this color. I mean, it was like they were placing an order, and then I was putting it in the goddamn auction, and they were winning it. They were getting the goddamn knife, and they were getting a goddamn tax write-off for the whole thing, too. I'm like, I fucking have had it with you goddamn people. You know, so I mean, that's a true story too. And this guy is going to be, when he's expecting, you know, from finishing his set off, he's going to realize, hey, Fader ain't coming no more. I don't give a shit anymore. And I've had it with you. And you can fucking, I'll write it down if you really need to know. I'll write it down. I don't have to say it anymore. That was not as good a joke.
You should do one of your oversized sculpture of the knife, like you have hanging outside of your garage.
I don't want to do another goddamn thing for these people, frankly. And if that's just the way, I'll do it. Let's get on to the next story. So this is the knife part. This is not the... I'm sour about this, too. So I did a... we had a customer who ordered a set of knives plus... A 9-piece set plus a set of steak knives. And he was like, we were pumped to do it. It was a great job to put through. And he said, is there anything you else can you throw in? And for some reason, Allison was just like, well, what should we do? I'm like, I don't know. I don't really, what does he mean? He's like, well, he wants this display or something like that. And I was like, well, I guess I could make like a knife block, but I mean, it's going to look very good. And there's too many knives anyway. And I said, you know, we've been talking about, you and I, all three of us have been talking about those magnet boards. So I thought, I said to him, well, you know what I could do is I could get one of the barrel staves and then I could make a knife magnet holder on it. See if he likes that. And he was like, well, he doesn't know if it's going to fit in his room. I'm like, what? He doesn't know if it's going to fit in his kitchen. Well, what the fuck does he want? I mean, I can't come to his house and measure. You know, it's like, I knocked something up and we sent some measurements. He said, that'll be perfect. So I had to figure out how to do the magnet board. We talked about it a few episodes ago. Mm-hmm. So Craig said,
so you're using your mill, I assume now.
Well, that's the move. So I have this little mini mill, and what I did was I found these rare earth magnets that are 2 inches by 1/2 inch, and you can get a pack of them. So I ordered those, and then I ended up getting a 1/2 inch router bit for a router.
Holy shit! 2 inches by 1/2 inch.
2 inch by 1/2 inch, but it's only like 1/8 of an inch thick. So okay. They're like a little rectangle. you know?
Hmm. Oh, I got you.
Yeah, so you get a stack of them, and so then what I did was I used the router bit, and I put it in my milling machine. I just drew a line out, and then I made little kind of like holes the size of the 2 inches by half an inch. And then, because if you just run a whole line and then you lay out all the magnets, they're going to fucking jump all over each other and you're never going to like sit. They're going to like bond with each other. They're going to pop, yeah. You know. So I just made these pockets and I used the milling machine. I was so pumped and I made it real thin. I routed down from behind all the way to maybe like a 16th of an inch and it worked great. And I put them in and I put the epoxy on top and I hung it on the wall and I tried them with weight and stuff like that and they worked great. We finished the knives, and then this morning I mounted the magnet board on the wall because I wanted to test it. You don't want to fucking not test it. You don't want to send that motherfucker out, and it turns into a guillotine in their house. So I put them all up, and they were holding. And then I just decided, well, what happens if this couple starts yelling at each other and slamming doors? So I just started taking my fist and just kind of like hitting the wall around the thing to see what would happen. You know, maybe it's by like a cupboard and there's someone slamming a cupboard and I started.
Can I guess what happened?
Please.
Did they spin?
No, they didn't
spin around.
They didn't spin. They started sliding down, but not the ones that you would think. So I have a couple knives in there with a 2-inch heel with lots of surface area to kind of get up on under the magnets. It was the thinner knives, the fillet knife.
And the narrower? You mean from like spine to edge?
Right, from spine to edge,
there's less surface area.
Less surface area, and then I was noticing when I was hitting underneath them, they would start to slide a little bit.
Yeah, they can spin too, so you need, as you probably now know, you need two lines of magnetry to stop that.
I realized I'm going to have to put another line of magnets in, so I ordered more magnets. I'm going to route out new holes behind it. Luckily, I have enough room. And then I'm going to do two lines of magnets because that one line was making them, it was almost like a pivot point. And if the knife wasn't, especially if the knife wasn't flat, like if the knife, like some of my knives had, like the butcher knife has some different angles. It's not a full flat grind. So it would, you know, if you hit around it, if you slammed into a couple of cabinets, it would start to kind of slip. And, you know, obviously that you can't have that. So that was my... I was cursing that guy too today. So, yeah. But the magnet board thing, if you had a CNC, a wood CNC thing, and you could knock out all those holes, man, I love them. It's great.
Mm. They're not cheap, those magnets, though, are they? When I bought some in the past to make knife holders,
pretty expensive. I got a pack of like 20 of those, like 2-inch by whatever they are.
Yeah.
And it was $20. So
that's not
wasn't terrible.
Oh,
wow. But the thing is one magnet ain't enough. Like you need to daisy chain them up. That's the cool thing about those rare earth magnets. You can throw, you put three together and it triples the strength of the magnet. Like I was starting to kind of add more and see how many I could add. And then, you know, you'd get a different, and I was talking to our buddy, Justin Stinson, he did it too. And you try all these different things and you get a little nervous because you're just like, what if I send this to this guy? And then what if he fucking throws a glass at his wife or something, or something falls and all of a sudden somebody gets their hand chopped off from this goddamn thing that I don't even want to do, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So.
Yep. Well, this is a happy episode already.
I told you, we're fucking sour. We're fucking sour.
Jeez.
I've when I was at Dragon's Breath, we were playing with making those magnet bars. And we learned that the rare earth magnets can actually come in various strengths as well, like how much pound, like weight they can support, I guess. Or I guess the force that's required to pull them apart. And the ones we settled on was like, it was 14-pound magnets. And you only had to stack up a couple of them. And holy shit, they were strong. But yeah, you still had to recess the hole down to within about a 16th or an 1/8 of an inch from the outside facing surface of the wood.
Yeah, the move is to let me see what I ended up getting. There's a few things. You have to see the strength of the magnet and then how much room you have. Because like it makes such everything makes a huge difference,
right?
Yeah, you know, that's the crazy part. And then I started to realize I made this wood, and then I put this wax on it. 20-pack strong neon. It doesn't say how strong they are.
I cut myself really badly making one of those, actually, because I didn't want screw holes in the wood. So I basically made like a metal plate, which you'd screw to the wall. And then the back of the magnets would sort of clip it on, if you know what I mean, onto that thing.
Oh, I've seen
this. But they're so strong. So you know, I'm putting it on. You're trying to put it on slowly, but obviously the magnets will just pull and catch a bit of skin in there and oosh. Yeah, pretty bad cut that was.
One thing that I also noticed was because I used, I finished the board. I hit it with some fire and then I kind of cleaned it back and then I hit it with some wax. I felt like the wax on the outside was making him extra slippery. Because like the force, like if you take the knife and pull it off, then you get the force. But if you like, as it's like the sheer weight is pulling it down, if the face was like slick, then all of a sudden you can feel that it's slicker and slicker. And then there's more a little bit, it's more slippery. So
yeah,
we never talk about magnet boards. Congratulations, guys! We're in fucking new world here.
There we go, science.
But if you can figure out a way to do them nice, you know, and I think that's a great add-on for sure. Especially if you're making nice knives, because there's some the ones you buy in the supermarket, wherever, they're terrible.
I said the ones that I made, it was a lot of work for it, you know? I'm sure if you made a lot of them, you could streamline that process. A CNC machine would make it easy.
Oh, dude, if you had a CNC machine, it's like money in the bank. But I would, it's such a big order that was like, and I wanted to learn how to do it and figure out how to do it, and that was worth it. But at the same time, I'd bitch the whole goddamn time, fucking whole time.
Okay, let's knock out a couple of sponsors.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now!
15% off, not to be sniffed at.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to
KnifeTalk.net/heat, because that will take you to Sword Ceramics. And as we all know by now, they are distributors of Avian Heats. They've usually got some in stock, but they can spec one up ready for you anyway. $75 off the normal retail price and free shipping in the US. So go take a look. KnifeTalk.net/heat. Shall we do some questions?
We got questions. We have listener feedback. We have one why me. That's always happened to me. That's good too. Whatever you want.
Okay, well, let's start with a few questions, and then we'll go to some feedback, maybe. Ranger Blades has contacted us on Instagram. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. DM us your questions, and they'll be added to our list. This is from Ranger Blades. Hey, guys, love the show. My question is, I just bought a 2x72 grinder. What would be the best attachment to buy next, the big wheel or the small wheel attachment? Keep making great content. Okay, so he's just bought, by the sound of it, his first 2x72. He's wondering what would be the most useful attachments. It's difficult not knowing, you know, exactly what you make. But I tend to use the big wheel far more than I'd use the small wheel attachments.
Really?
Small wheels are generally used, you know, for, you know, little finicky bits. The big wheel I use just as much as a platen, yeah.
Interesting. I would have gone the other way.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, when I first started handle sculpting, especially to get kind of like the nice little curves and swoops and stuff, that small wheel was critical for getting into those corners and kind of blending things out and kind of creating those unique contours. I almost never use a large wheel.
Really?
Yeah.
Me neither. I'm trying to think.
What are you using the big wheel for?
For most things, when I'm not grinding my flats, anything when I'm not doing flats, basically, because what I find is you get just that little bit of contact instead.
Oh, yeah.
So you can just use it; doesn't generate as much heat and all the rest of it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Even when I'm doing like hogging stuff off, if I'm doing like profiling, I'll use the big wheel, but then I'll just use the platen at the end just to make sure I get straight edges.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's just less contact, and it just seems to chip way a bit better.
Did you guys ever see
profiles?
Nick Wheeler did a video where how he grinds his knives. And sometimes what he'll do is he'll take passes with the wheel. Like he'll hit, he'll use the wheel to take off passes on when he's grinding down a blade. It was a pretty interesting concept. It seemed like it was he's too good to do it for me to even contemplate doing it. But it was a kind of a neat idea. I would think if you had this isn't just a Brodbeck thing, but if you have the Mareko Platin, which has two different sized wheels, go with a big wheel just because you got the two small wheels on your Platin, so two different size wheels.
Right. Yeah, I also use big wheel a lot for finishing as well. So putting on like a super fine belt, and for doing spines and things like that. Obviously, going across the direction of the way the wheel's spinning, you're not doing perpendicular to it, obviously. You can get some really nice finishes that way too, and breaking edges and things like that too.
One thing I've just recently started to do is when I designed my first chef knife for the Cosmic Drift series, it kind of swoops up. It's not a straight spine, it kind of swoops up. And I kind of, knowing that it was going to swoop up, I was trying to figure out what would be the best way to, when I designed it, how to kind of clean it up. And I kind of had the design, plus I used the radius platen. And I kind of just made sure that the radius platen and the spine kind of were in the same ballpark. And I used the radius platen to clean that, to round that spine up. And it was perfect. It was a great, like, design decision to say, okay, I know we want to do this. That's one of the things I feel very strongly about in terms of design is to, when you're designing something, it's like, okay, this is great. Now, well, how are we going to clean that part up? Like the Ricasso, or how are we going to clean certain things up? Do we have the ability to, get into these spots with the tools that we have? And then maybe you might want to like bump up. And sometimes you see that a lot of knife makers will just like, you can tell that Ricasso area from the Ricasso to the heel, they just have they have a specific contact wheel that fits in there perfect. You can tell, and that it, sometimes it used to be one of those things where I was just like, it kind of turned me off because I was just like, if I can see how you did
see that 2-inch wheel fitted right
if
in
if you
there.
Can yeah. see how you can see yeah. exactly how you did it, I was just like, he just fucking stuck a goddamn contact wheel in there. I know what he had. I had the same. But then I sort of realized, you know what? That's a goddamn good way to kind of think about how you can make everything simple and make it correct and kind of go through it. So I changed my tune on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think right now the only thing I really use the big wheel for is for when I'm making my Damascus, I put a really coarse, even like a worn out 36, I can still use it for ripping off kind of the forge scale and bark, like 90% of it, before then going to like a nicer belt and the flats of a platen, or even possibly still on the contact wheel. To then clean out the rest of the forge scale and bring those scratches up to a higher finish.
You're gonna think I'm totally crazy, but I was all in on the Tormek sharpening system, then I was all in complete hatred of it, and now I'm in super love with it. Like it's a strange relationship I have with the goddamn Tormek. There was a middle point where I used the big wheel as my to try to like copy the size of the Tormek. And I had the big wheel on with the belt, and then I had it going super duper slow, and it was almost like the exact same angle and the exact same speed as the Tormek. And I was just trying to like figure out how to transition this. Maybe that would be like a good transitionary thing in the beginning to kind of like roughen the grinds and stuff like that. I was using that. But I'm like Mareko. I can't really even think when I use the contact wheel. Big one.
Nice. Okay. Who wants to take the next one?
From SBG Knives, he says, question for you fine folks. How thin do you take an 8-inch chef's knife at the blade? Have an order for one and would like to do it right. Stay fresh, gents. I'm going to guess he's referring to, or they are referring to, at the edge.
Cutting edge. Yeah.
What do you guys... What's your move?
I think it depends. A chef's knife is a pretty broad title, I suppose.
Sure.
But yeah, speak to them, find out what they're going to be using it for. If it's just like a general purpose knife or something specific. Generally, if they're sort of professional chefs, I'll take it down to basically down to the, sharp. I'll grind them sharp, and then I grind it, you know, that sort of secondary bevel in, which is the, you know, the sharp angle. But yeah, if they, you know, if it's a gift for somebody's mum, for example, I couldn't give you a number, but yeah, it would be just that little bit thicker, just because they're probably not going to be take much care of it as much as you'd hope a professional chef would do. But yeah, I mean, that's quite a broad thing to say. But yeah, I generally go as thin as you could cut with it, and then I'll take it to a sharpener and then give it that secondary bevel.
Sure. Yeah, for me, it's I used to always push things really far, like really thin. But then I started kind of trying to take into consideration somebody's understanding. And I know this through communicating via email with the customer. Most customers, if they have other custom knives, like to talk about them. But if they have other custom knives, to me, that hopefully that means they have kind of a sense and understanding of how to better maintain a thinner edge. And that will then inform me of how thin to push that edge. But if it's just going out into the world or to somebody I don't know, or don't know what their experience is with custom knives and thin edges especially, I'll probably keep it actually a little bit on the beef, quote unquote beefier side, which is around maybe 5 or 10 thousandths before sharpening, just to have that little extra meat behind that bevel to support that edge and help prevent it from chipping out. But honestly, as thin as you can take it, in general, my opinion is as thin as you can take it, and that thing still be able to take some abuse. Like if you chop through some bamboo chopsticks, that is a great kind of a way to test edge stability, I guess, more than anything. Mm-hmm. How stable that edge is based on how thin or how quote unquote thick it is. That I've always really liked that test, and I keep chopsticks handy in the shop just for that occasion. But yeah, it's just gonna. I think in general you want to push it thinner than leaving it thicker. If you're getting up at like 20 thousandths at the edge before sharpening, that's a bit on the thick side, I would say. But shooting for about 5 to 10 thousandths, 10 to 12 thousandths at the edge before sharpening is not bad.
What do you think of that test? Every so often you see where somebody will take their fingernail and then they'll kind of like bulge out the edge. What do you think? You know what I'm talking about?
Or
they'll
take for sure.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? What does that tell you?
To me, it informs how thin things are at the edge. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. Because depending on how the person heat treated the knife, what kind of steel the knife is made from, like, sure, you can have it deflect and come back all day long, but then the first time you accidentally cut an apple stem or something and it ribbon or like deforms, that's not going to be good for you. So you still want to, again, I try to push it as thin as possible without it potentially taking on any damage. You know, you can grind any knife to a thin foil edge, but how well and how stable and tough that edge is another question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I see them and I always look at it and I think to myself, I'm like, what does that mean? Is it mean it's also going to be a softer edge to sharpen? Like, what is that? I mean, I just don't it's fucking good. It looks cool. That's for sure. And I'm not, God bless you. If you're listening to this and you say, oh, I fucking do that all the time. God bless you. I don't understand it, but I'm not saying it like, I don't understand it. Like, you know, I don't know these people. I just don't get it. But I'm kind of on the side of both of you. I don't know thous at all. And I've never pretended like I do. And I try to make my most important to me is making sure that the whole...
It's a feeling, man. It's a feeling.
Right. Can't stop this feeling. I try to make that... I want to make sure the most important part is that edge is, before I sharpen it, is even. Because that's when the problems happen. Like if you have some part that's too thin or something like in the middle, if it's too thin or if it's not like even thin, then when you start to sharpen it, all of a sudden you end up with like a, you know, a bolo or something like that. Sometimes it can be a little bit, I don't know. I used to make my edge much thicker. Now I'm pushing much thinner and thinner as I go. And I'm finding myself using the Tormek way more because It's fat. I'm getting it faster, but I'm not like losing control of the edge. Sometimes with the belt, I was finding I was losing control, and I was going too hot, or I was going too fast, or taking off too much material. And I'm starting to really just be comfortable with the Tormek and just take my time and get a better edge. And I'm getting much better results.
Yeah, yeah. I think also a contributing factor is the overall thickness of the blade. So you can get it super fine at the edge, but if it's thick at the spine, like that knife is just going to wedge into whatever material it's cutting with. And I think, I actually, what was it? When I was up in the Northeast, I was at Zach Jonas's house teaching a class, and he had a kind of a play on a Chinese cleaver, like a Chinese vegetable cleaver. But it was cut out of some sort of 16th of an inch steel, and then it was 10,000ths at the edge, which typically for me is still kind of on the thicker side, but because of how thin that blade already was, and then he ground it down to 10,000ths and sharpened it and all that, dude, that thing just fell through food. It was fucking crazy. And so again, even though 10,000ths of an inch seems thick to me in general, because of the rest of the blade and the rest of the blade's thinness, man, that thing, like, it cut like a dream. It cut like one of my knives where I take it down to maybe 5,000ths or a couple thousandths before sharpening. And it's, you know, you can feel those nuances with time and experience, but yeah, I think that's another thing to try to take into consideration. Hopefully your stock material is probably already maybe an eighth of an inch, and that'll help alleviate that issue. But yeah.
Don't sleep on 16th inch steel for knives. You can make a fucking good ass knife with 16th inch. I made a ton of real, and part of me wants to kind of go back to it. But I mean, the problem is like when you do a full flat grind on a chef knife that's a 16th inch, all of a sudden it gets a little bit like, all right, what are we doing here? It's like, it gets a little bit crazy, but yeah. I've had really good experience with 16th, especially depending on the geometry of the profile. You know, if you have a big profile, it's not as whippy as you think it's going to be. I've made 8-inch chef knives with a 2-inch heel at 16th, and there's no way. You'd think it's like a noodle, and it isn't like a noodle at all. But then you take 16th and you make a boning knife, you can make a fillet knife. The difference between using 3/32, you could take the same profile of a boning knife, make it a 3/32 or an eighth. You make the same knife with a 16th, and you have a difference between a boning knife and a flexible fillet knife. Right. Because that 3/4 of an inch or 1 inch of height from the spine to the thing, to this edge, it's dynamite. Don't sleep on 16th, man.
I just want to, so I keep referencing 5/1000ths of an inch. For those in the metric world, it is 0.127 millimeters.
Well, that's the gun, that's the gun people.
Yeah, it's foil. Okay. Jeff, do you want to take another question?
Yes.
And then we'll do some listener feedback.
Magikick Knives. Hey, guys, I got a question for you. I've been wanting to forge some cheese knives from stainless steel. However, basically, all the stainless steel that is a decent size for forging is usually out of stock from places I usually forge my steel. So it got me thinking. I don't know if he's been listening to our podcast or not, but we'll keep going. It's got me thinking, is there really any point to hardening a cheese knife? I'd love to know your thoughts, guys. Thanks. Didn't we do that? We covered this a couple months ago, didn't we?
We did. When I did that butter knife, we were talking about whether that would need hardening. In the end, I did harden it just because I prefer to work with hardened steel. It just grinds differently. But, I mean, with regards to, you know, it would certainly cut cheese. It's not going to dull the edge if it's not hardened, I'm sure of it. But we did talk about the possibility of the stainless not being as stainless if it wasn't treated, I think, wasn't it? I can't quite remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, at that point, if it's a cheese knife, I wonder why you're even forging it. Is it for the forge aesthetic? Or because I don't even think you really put an edge on a cheese knife, right? It's more like a butter knife edge. At least the cheese knives I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, you would have some sort of taper, but it wouldn't necessarily go to a sharp edge. Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't it get like stuck in the cheese? I don't know. Fucking cheese knives.
Yeah, but you do that, and it normally has like a fork end as well, doesn't it? You know,
is that so you can pick up stupid fucking thing with it bends up? We got the two like looks like
exactly,
the Iron
yeah,
Sheik's
two little
boot. You know what I'm talking
yes.
about? Anyway,
yeah,
you know what I'm
yeah,
talking about, right?
That's a cheese knife. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that? What is that? What is that thing? So the knife goes, it bends up, and it's got that little two forks on the top. What is that for?
Yeah. It's for picking the cheese up.
Is that just for cheese, or is it for salami too?
I suppose you could use it for salami, but I mean, you must have
a
cheese knife.
Dumb knife.
There's two kinds of people in this world. Those with a cheese knife and savages.
Oh, right. Right. And the grapefruit spoon people, too. Don't forget about them.
The same goes for the gatto fork.
Gatto fork. Listen to you. You are so out of touch. What's a fucking gatto fork? Is that a cake fork, you fucking wacko?
It pretty much is, yeah.
Gatto fork? What is a gatto fork?
Similar. So you'd have a very small fork with three prongs, it's normally the left side. Has almost spoon-like, almost blade-like, thicker. Basically, one of the tines is thicker. Yeah.
So, a gatto fork. Listen to you.
I've never heard of
ghetto fork is what it sounds like to me. That's what I think.
Ghetto fork. Spork. That's what
they have
is,
all sorts of. You know, that is the funny thing. When I was younger, I was sitting at a restaurant and they put the utensils down and there was this. It was like a spatula, but it was a knife. And it turned out, I said to my dad, what is this for? He's like, it's a fish fork. It's a fish knife. And it wasn't straight. So you pick it up, like it was almost like a spoon, but the end was not a spoon. It was like a butter knife.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I have a couple of those. I didn't know those were fish knives.
Yeah.
I thought they were just kind of like an offset spreading knife.
No, it's for, I think it's probably for, you know, if you have like a sole or like a dulver sole, a flat fish where you're boning it at the table, they want you to pick it up with it. It's almost like a spatula. Who laughed at boning it at the table?
It wasn't me. That
yeah,
time. It
was somebody
Morocco.
Laughed.
Grow up, Morocco.
When you're boning it at the table. Jeez. Oh, God, you have a gatto fork. I don't.
Okay, listen. Let's do some listener feedback.
What do we say for the cheese knife? Do we
oh,
even
right.
care?
I thought we
do
had.
We even care?
I thought we had.
Fuck you. I would say probably most cheese knives I've seen are probably made from a non-hardenable stainless. So if you wanted to texture it, you'd get like 316 or 304 or something like that and texture it. And that way, when you forge it, because there's no carbon in it, you're not worried about the carbides growing too big or not doing their job. Because it's just always going to be stainless. So texture shit out of it. Put a little edge on it. It doesn't need to be super sharp because it's cutting cheese on a wooden board every once in a while. That's what I would say.
And, I mean, most flatware, the stainless flatware isn't hardened anyway. I mean, they're not hardening spoons and forks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But another point there is you said on... Where's your etiquette, guys? Come on. Quite often cheese is served on a marble plate.
Oh,
come
geez.
On.
You
to keep
guys.
It cold.
You're speaking to Fingal. Yeah. You're speaking
with,
to Fingal.
I think so,
you know,
yeah,
we
yeah.
gotta get Fingal on because he knows all the different. He sent
like
me
a glass dome over the top.
He sent me some cheese and he told me about letting it breathe and taking it out of the refrigerator and got to put it out for 2 days. This and that. You know,
really,
it's all this stuff with the cheese. Oh boy,
the wax paper.
Oh
yes.
And get the saw turns and all that. Oh yes.
Wax paper for wrapping up the cheese.
Yes, so it doesn't sweat. Yeah.
Oh, instead of like a plastic wrap?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
I'm not a cheese. It's fine.
Never heard that.
I don't get horned up about cheese, ladies and germs. It's
really?
Not really. I mean, it's fine. I'm not getting nuts about it. You know,
right.
I'm not breaking out the wax paper and you know getting up my marble. How many cheese? All right, Craig. Let's just finish this cheese story up. How many in your refrigerator right now? How many different cheeses do you have?
Okay, you probably will laugh
Good.
At this, just because I know for a fact that we've got too many.
How many cheeses?
I'd say we probably have 7 or 8 different
really?
Cheeses.
Really?
Wow. Okay. I probably have about 5 or 6 myself.
Morocco, what kind of cheese? How much cheese do you have in your house? What cheese do you have? I need to know.
I got some sort of goat, like some Spanish goat cheese. Like, it's a hard goat cheese. I have some manchego. I have brie, taleggio, herbed goat cheese, like a soft stuff, and then just, like, you know, shredded mozzarella and fresh mozzarella. And I think that's it.
I'm right stupefied. Now. I'm so amazed that you have so much cheese. Is this the normal amount of cheese you have in your house?
This is. So I was talking to my wife about how we were talking about luxury last week, and she's like, food.
Yeah.
And that's probably the thing that is the most luxurious part of our life is, you know, we'll splurge a little bit on super delicious stuff. Oh, I have a Stilton. I have a Stilton as well in the fridge.
How long will these cheeses last? When do they go out?
Right, yeah. So I usually like to get smaller wedges that are maybe only a few ounces because I have no interest in the cheese going bad because it's heartbreaking.
All right. There you go. Cheese talk, ladies and germs.
Cheese talk.
You have eight cheeses, Craig? You fucking greasy.
Probably, yeah. Cool. Trying to think now what they'd be. So we'd also have a Parmesan, we'd have a mozzarella, a brie. Okay. We'd always have like a soft, I can't even think what it would be, but just a soft white cheese that, you know, spreadable for the kids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'd normally have like a roll, which would have like a roll with garlic and chives and stuff in it. There's normally something like that there. Then we'd have, you know, like a British cheddar as well. Right. Goat cheese. There's always loads there. Always.
How
loads.
About Fromunda? Yeah, you have any Fromunda?
No.
Cheese from under.
From under your balls. Oh, from under your balls. There you go.
Moving on.
Jesus.
Okay.
Christ. Okay. Listener feedback, you bastards.
Listener feedback. Cheese from under.
You never heard of from under cheese? Oh, from under your balls. Oh. Knife Talk listener feedback, ladies and germs. This is where a chance you can tell us what we've done wrong or what you feel like we need to know. Something like that. Go to follow us on Instagram, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. This one comes from Brody. Brody sent us a message. He sent us a message a couple weeks ago saying that he was going to an event in Australia. He was going to bring beef jerky or wild game jerky and knives. You guys remember that?
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
He said, "Hey boys, just wrapped up my first market. I sold some jerky, no knives, but a lot of interest. Thanks for the tips." We were talking about what would you bring? We all had our ideas. Bring more goddamn jerky. That's what I would do. That is the key. And maybe a little Fromunda. You never know. I mean, fucking jerky
from under the counter.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Under the counter. From under the counter. I got some from under cheese. The next one comes from Sam Anderson. I'm sorry, Sam. I know Sam's a good dude. He works at Alex. Alex. I don't know why it's written down this way. It must be my fault. He works for the Alex Steel Co. He's a great guy. Sam's the man. I had a nice conversation with him, and he goes, "Hey, I have a new bid idea. Buyer's remorse." We were suggesting that our listeners come up with some bid ideas called buyer's remorse. The listeners can send in stories about tool purchases that didn't go as planned, and it might help others avoid the same problems. For example, we bought a small bandsaw from Home Depot for the sole purpose of cutting slots and hammer handles for wedges. It only had one job, but no matter how you adjusted the machine, the blade had its mind of its own. Sold it right away and bought a well-taken care of older bandsaw from Craigslist. Night and day difference.
Right.
Don't make the same mistakes. I like this bit, except for I know our listeners are going to rat people out, and they're going to want to say they're going to want to name names, and they're going to want us to name names. And I don't think we should be in the business of naming names. You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because
they still complain, though, can't they?
They can complain. I think if the listeners want to do a listener, if they want to do buyer's remorse, and we can all do buyer's remorse right now.
Yeah, I got
you. You can definitely. Oh, I bet you do. I bet you do. You like to name names. Listen, guys. If you're going to send, if you're going to send in, don't name names, because I'm not going to. I'm just not going to read it. You know, I'm not going to like. I'm not going to like. Verbally abuse or write something. You don't want to say something about a company we don't know anything about either. So just be fucking vague.
These tools, are they tools that people buy in?
Could be anything. Could be fucking, you know, cheese. Whatever. Don't, if you have buyer's remorse, send us your buyer's remorse, but you're going to have to be vague. And don't write me like the Magna Carta. Some of you guys, like, edit yourselves, but don't name names, because we're not doing that. We're not doing that. So guys, what kind of buyer's remorse do you have?
I would say my buyer's remorse that I still reflect on was when I first started. I thought I was going to be a fucking genius and build my own grinder and save some money. And I really wish I did not do that. Because what I did is I wasted a month and a half fucking around with this stupid thing when I could have been working the whole time and making shit.
Well, what's the buyer's remorse?
I wish I didn't do it. I wish I had just actually bought a grinder that was ready to rock and roll.
No, but is there a tool that you bought that you're just like,
I paid for all the parts. I spent hours building the fucking thing. I think that's the buyer's remorse, is spending all this money and all this time when I should have just bought the fucking grinder that was ready to rock and roll instead of building one.
That's a drag. But you figured it out, though.
Yeah, I mean, I figured it out. I'm glad to have the understanding of Grindr, but at the same time, I still reflect on it, and I'm just like, fucking stupid. I should have just bought a Grindr.
Craig, do you have any buyer's remorse?
Fucking Dremels. Okay. More than one. I've probably bought 4 or 5 Dremels. Yeah. Thankfully, I no longer use Dremels for any of my processes, but I did. And, you know, not cheap one. You know, Dremels, you know, branded Dremels. And they were just always shit. Always shit. They'd work for a few months, and then they wouldn't. So, yeah, I spent way too much money on Dremels.
If you hadn't bought, more than 3 Dremels, you're not Dremeling. I mean, right? I mean, you know, you never actually Dremel unless you've got 3 or 4 of them.
Exactly. You're right. You're completely right. Yeah.
I mean, the stupidest part about the Dremels is...
That's a t-shirt.
I mean, you haven't been... I mean, yeah, seriously. I mean, it's like you don't have 3 or 4 of them. You're not doing it right.
You're not trembling hard enough.
I mean, it's like so stupid. It's like those goddamn things are so shitty. I have 3. I have 3. I had one in college. I thought I was smart. I had one in college. Broke that right away. And then my wife had one. I took that. Brought it here to the shop. I got 2 other ones here. You ain't got 3. You ain't doing it right. And the worst part about these goddamn Dremels is the arrogance of having their own area in a hardware store. That little location, you pay up the wazoo for Dremel bits. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed just like, whoa, these seem like, whoa, that seems really expensive. Why? They're only giving
me... this little cutoff wheel, that'll be
they're
handy.
Giving me... They're giving me 4 drums? Wow, for $8? This is such a bargain. I'm only going to use them in 2 seconds. Fucking Dremel. Remember how I said don't name names?
there with the Dremel.
The libel show brought to you by our friends at Dremel. The Dremels are really something. I use it every day, frankly, though. I love those Dremels. I like the Tootsie Rolls. You know about a Tootsie Roll? That's what my old lead guy, John Ledford, used to call the drum sanding things. He called them Tootsie Rolls. Get yourself some Tootsie Rolls. Yeah.
I do have a real buyer's remorse.
Do it.
Okay. So When I used to make my sayas, I used to do a two-piece saya where I would have one side thin and then this other side was thicker, and then I would route out the pocket where the knife would go. And I cheaped out and bought a router for like $30 from Harbor Freight or something like that. And everything's great about it except for how you tighten the collar, where you adjust and set the height for how deep it cuts. Because the first time I used the thing, I had it cranked down, had depth set and everything. I'm almost done, and I noticed that it's cutting deeper at one end than the other, and I was like, what the fuck's going on? It had slowly vibrated down, even though I had it cranked. And so I cranked it harder and harder, and the little thing that's supposed to help keep it all tight ended up bending, and I shouldn't have cheaped out on it. Honestly, that's the end of the story. I cheaped out on it. I should have just spent, you know, whatever, another $30 to get the next step up, and that probably would have been way better.
Speaking of, that reminds me, speaking of cheap and awful, those screws with a plastic handle on the side. You know what I'm talking about? Like if you like a bolt, and then it's like a lever. Yeah. I was listening to Jimmy Duresta was talking about how he hates them more than anything. It's like a screw. It's usually for like tightening up here. Because I got a Peloton, and we use it all the time. My wife uses it. I use it. You know, it's been moving up and down. And that goddamn handle is a threaded screw and a threaded bolt. And then there's this ratcheting plastic handle that you can crank down. Mm. Well, that fucking thing breaks off, and then you're out. So I had to I had to order more, and the ones I ordered more broke. They are, and then all of a sudden, I heard Jimmy say those things are the worst goddamn piece of hardware there is, and he's right. If you try to hog one down, you're out. And then, but the best thing is it's got a Allen key on the end, and you just get your Allen wrench, and then there you go. But at the same time, it's not as soigné. But I do have buyer's remorse about something. Remember we talked about not naming names? I bought a goddamn tire hammer years ago from a guy. And this goddamn thing, it was such a production getting. I had it made. And you know what? Now I love it. But there was a good amount of time where there was a lot of hostility. I went with the tire hammer. And the funny story is, back in the day, I was talking to Jesse, and I was like, yeah, I really think a tire hammer's for me because if it's all steel, I can repair it. You know, I'm a welder, I can repair it. If it's cast iron, who am I going to want to get the hammer whisperer to come up from Brooklyn and like, you know, take my children? I mean, he's like, it's like a ton of money. So I got this tire hammer and I had it built. It turned out it was the wrong guy. Jesse sent me the guy. Turns out to be the wrong guy. That was number one.
He said this is the one you want,
and this is the guy who makes it. And then I was like, okay, great. And I talked to the guy. It was fine. And then I sent a picture to Jesse after I've already put the deposit down to build it. He goes, oh, that's not the guy. That's not the guy to make it. I'm like, yeah, it's the fucking guy you sent it me to. And he's like, oh, no, that's the wrong guy. I'm like, you fucking sent me to the wrong guy then. So I went with it. It came. It was not. It arrived very late, not finished. And I had to re-weld all this stuff, and I had to redo things. And I remember that was the first hammer in where you came, Mareko, remember?
Yeah.
And before...
What did you do to him?
What? What did I do to who? Wait, we missed it. What happened? Rewind. What happened?
It was the first hammer in where Mareko came. Oh, and I was just wondering what you did to him.
Fucking guy. Unbelievable.
It was Steve Pellegrino's steak. That thing was delicious.
Oh, have mercy. Have mercy. But I had to fix this because I had all these like heavy hitters coming, and I had to get this. I had to re-weld the whole thing. And I ended up calling the guy up and say, listen, I just want to tell you something. I had to re-weld this thing because I got real welders coming to this place. And it was... The bottom line was I had to get Cliff in to help me fix the whole thing, and I was just cursing this guy. And now it's a great tire hammer, but I it's a cursed tire hammer. Kind of wish I didn't buy it. So I had to redo it. But that was the only reason I got a tire hammer, I could fix it. So that was a long way.
Do you know where you'll never get buyer's remorse? Down TexasFireSupply.com. Everything you need as a knife maker or a farrier or blacksmith, whatever you may be. And the great thing about Texas Fire Supply is they sell Indasa Rhino Wet, which is the the sandpaper of the superstars. It's what everybody uses. Make sure you're using Rhino-Wet. If you're doing any sort of hand sanding, it's the best. It's the best stuff. They sell it at Texas. Excuse me. They sell it at Texas Ferris Supply, amongst many other things. So go take a look. And if you use Knife Talk 10 at checkout, you'll get 10% off your whole order. There we go.
We have why me, why does this always happen to me? We got two of them. They're pretty good.
Let's do them. Okay.
All right, guys. Why me, why does this always happen to me? You send in, once again, Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And you can send us your problems. You don't understand what's happening. And then, you know, we try to figure it out, but sometimes it don't work. We never know. This one comes from LCA Knife Works. Hey, y'all. So I have a why me, why does this always happen to me? Actually, I have two. This happened to me last Sunday. I was grinding knives. It was thundering and lightning pretty bad. I figured I was safe since I was in an enclosed 12x12 building, which is my grinding room. Wrong. Lightning struck a tree about 150 yards behind the shop, ran a barbed wire fence up and down the shop, and jumped to the wire running into my shop. In the blink of an eye, it felt like someone hit me in the chest and my legs went out from under me. I woke up about 5 minutes later in a puddle of drool. I'm saying it's from urine, but he's saying drool to my wife. I mean, like, let's clean it up here, LCA. I mean, let's just make this story the way it is. I woke up in a puddle of drool, wink, wink, to my wife standing over me asking, "What happened to you?" Thankfully, my surge protector took the brunt of the strike. Guess it's time to rewire the shop. Yikes. Have you heard that shit before?
No. That's wild.
I do have a grinding room
is not where you want to fall, especially when you're holding a knife.
Well, being electrocuted is not nice either. I mean, I got a story to tell.
Oh, pissing yourself. Let's face it.
He didn't do that. I just changed it. He said he drooled, but I mean, come on, man. It's not fucking with us. But I do have a story. I was on a podcast years ago, and this guy was telling this story. It sounded like the biggest horseshit story I'd ever heard in my life, and I couldn't control myself. He says, I was in the shop, and it was thundering and lightning, and I decided to stand and watch the thunder and lightning in my shop, and I had one hand on my table saw, and then the other hand, I had a glass of whiskey in my hand, and I was sipping the whiskey and electric, and then the lightning hit the building, and I was frozen by the electricity, and the glass was frozen in my hand, and I was, the first surge was going through. He's telling the story, and the guy's like, "Oh, really?" And I'd say, and I'm sitting there like, this is the biggest bullshit story I've ever heard in my life. And I said, I was a fucking guest. And I think I said, maybe there was some epoxy in your hand. You were electrocuted. You couldn't put your fucking drink down. Knock it off. And that's the end of that. So look, I'm glad he's okay. I don't know what to say. The electricity scares the shit out of me, but I don't know how it kind of like, I don't know how you would get electric shock from electricity in your shop.
Yeah.
Mm.
I was at a friend's shop. He did a lot of Volkswagen auto body repair and rebuilt old Volkswagens. He did some really great stuff, but he had a stick welder that was always, you know, just right there for all the different body repair and shit like that he was doing. And one night, we're all kind of sitting around. Some people are smoking weed, some people are drinking, and we're just fucking around. And somebody's like, "Hey," and they turn on the stick welder, and somebody's holding on to the ground, and then another person's holding on to the stick, and there's like a circle of like 10 of us.
God.
And we're all holding each other's hands, basically. We're singing Kumbaya and feeling the electricity going through us. And one by one, somebody would be like, "I don't like the way this feels." And then they would step out of the circle. So it got down to just me and my one buddy. And we were just kind of like barely touching the tips of our fingers. Then I grab his hand, and our whole bodies like start, the muscles in our arms start to clench up and curl in. And he's like, I can't let go. And I'm just laughing at him the whole time. I finally let go of him, and that was the end of the game. We never played it again.
No, best you don't.
No, and I found out later that it's really apparently very dangerous to fuck around with electricity because it can stop your heart.
Oh,
and not just even in the moment, but somewhere down the road. Well, who knows?
Oh, wow. I'm just glad that that's the end of the story, because I thought like the loser has to like suck someone's dick or something like that.
What? Jesus.
I don't know. You're fucking standing around with electricity, and then there's got to be some sort of punishment at the end. I mean, who wins? Who wins being electrocuted the whole time, for Christ's sakes? God. I remember my dad had an electric fence, and I used to grab it. And I grabbed it one time. I was like, I'm done grabbing this fucking fence. And then you try to pee on it, and then you're just like, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
Electricity's no good. Second part of the question is, second part of the thing is, he says, it's cold as hell for South Mississippi. Tuesday morning, I had a bunch of knives that needed to get to the engraver. The pickup was at 10 a.m., and I woke up at 9:15 with two more handles to grind. It's hard as hell to get out of bed when your woman is warm and it's cold outside. Hell of a decision to make. That was the fastest I've ever finished a knife. Maybe Forging Fire doesn't have a bad concept after all. So, LCA Knives, P.S., Craig, howdy. So, he says howdy to you, so...
Howdy.
Okay. Got a warm woman inside. Howdy. One LCA warm woman in the bed. You can't make those knives. Right. And I got one last one. That was just a story. That wasn't really a why I mean. This is why does it always happen to me? The guy's a lucky guy. He wakes up in the morning. I don't know what's.
Are you okay, Jeff? Do we need to stop?
Are you being okay right now?
What's why me? Why does this always happen to me? I wake up and I'm horny. That's really what the problem is. Oh, God, I have some problems. All right, the Tradesman's Channel says, I'm not sure if this is the place for it, but it'll have to be. Oh, so this will be, he wrote, I installed new lighting in the shop. It's daylight here. I'm a tool maker, and being as such, I usually use simple steels like 1080 to heat treat the forge. Last weekend, I forged just about $2,000 worth of orders complete with heat treating. While cleaning up the steel on my 2x72, I found one full of spiderweb cracks. Just on one end, and I set it aside, and the next 10 draw knives had the same thing. I quenched way too hot and lost an entire weekend's worth of work. I'm back to turning off the lights for heat treatment, and I'm now gathering materials to heat treat to build a heat treat oven. Good times. Has that ever happened to you, Mareko?
Yeah, I think I was forging a little fuck-off knife, like a bench knife or something like that, And after I had it, I did the forging and the heat treat and everything, and I thought everything was good. I still have this knife, actually. And it, after letting it cool down and cleaning it up a bit, there were cracks all over the place, and I couldn't figure out what could have happened. And that was the only, because I had done it out of the forge, that was the only thing I could think of, that I had allowed it to sit or get to too high of a temperature before quenching it. And the whole thing was just full of cracks. It was gnarly.
I had that happen when I was doing the Cuban knives back in the day. I was heat treating too hot, and like even 25 degrees too hot. You didn't see the spider webs until you started hand sanding, which was the biggest drag. So you grind them all, all of a sudden you see, I had like three of them. I can see them. I have them bolted to the shop. Five of them had like out of 50 out of 40 out of 35, something like that, where I had to redo and I couldn't figure it out. And that was a scary, scary thing, because I was like, what happens is happens all the time. That's right. The hardest part about getting into the business is like, how do you deal with problems as opposed to just like, crumpling into a ball and being like, I'm the worst at this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You go from being the best at this, I'm fucking good at this, to I am a fucking piece of garbage. So fast.
I think that's any creative sort of endeavor. I think it's the same, isn't it? You're either on the biggest high thinking, I am the man.
I don't know anything.
Yeah. Ugh. I tell you who know their shit. Dharma Steel. The guys at dharmasteel.se. Amazing stainless Damascus in some amazing, amazing patterns. Super, super easy to work with. Take a look at Dharma Steel Lab on Instagram. You'll see the kind of stuff people are making with it. Always, always special stuff. And we've got a special deal with them. So if you sign up for an account at dharmasteel.se and use Knife Talk on checkout, you'll get 10% off your order. Go take a look at dharmasteel.se. Okay, should we go back to a couple of questions?
Sure.
Okay, where are we? Speedster Stoves. All right, lads, looking for advice. In my side gig, I produce quite a bit of aluminium scrap, small pieces of sheet of around 0.2 millimeters thick. I don't want to send this to landfill, so my cunning plan is to recycle the scrap into quench plates. Any advice on how to achieve this? Yes. Right, so they're super, super thin, 0.2 millimeters. he's going to need some sort of crucible, I would have thought, and melt it down, surely.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, that would be you'd have to melt them all down, right?
Yeah.
There's Google some that, YouTube videos on these guys making stuff with like aluminum cans and melting them down. I don't think you need a lot of heat, do you, for aluminum?
Yeah, I don't think so. But it's tricky handling that stuff because it's liquid metal, and that's not going to feel good if it gets on you or if it lands on something it's not supposed to and catches the shop on fire.
Yeah, if you were to make quench plates with it, though, you need to make sure that the flats are flat. Like, it has to be, like, super-duper flat. Yeah. So if you, like, in a quench plate should be, I mean, I've used quench plates that are half-inch thick, and it's all right, but it's not as good as, like, three-quarters of an inch to an inch thick plates.
Yeah, right. To an inch, yeah.
But
yeah.
The most important thing is the faces that touch your steel has to be flat, because the whole idea of a quench plate is it's evenly sucking out all the material at the heat. The heat all at the same time. So if there was like a gap or something like that, you wouldn't get an even quench. So whatever you do, you know.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work for something that's not that expensive to buy.
Well, he wants to do something with that aluminum. I don't know what else you can do except for, what the fuck would you do with aluminum scrap? I mean, how much, take it to the recycling bin.
Have you ever seen those, what is it? There was this guy
named... Cheese
knives? What's that?
Cheese knives? You make some aluminum cheese knives?
Yeah, well, there are knives with aluminum handles. I was just trying to think of this one company. I think it was called Rigtig was the name of the company. And they were in business like in the 40s or 50s. It was just one old dude. But he would make basically a sandcaster of the handle. And then he would basically place the blade in it and then cast the aluminum around it. So maybe special guards or I don't know. I don't know. It does seem to me to be a lot of work is it even something you really want to use? If you do cast it, then you like you were just saying, you have to do a lot of work then following that to surface it and flatten it out.
They could be spacers. You could use them as spacers.
Yeah, maybe.
If they were big, if they were, you know, had enough as a disc, you could probably use them as spacers, but
sure.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go, Speedster.
Let's tell everybody about Knife Print. Knife Print is an amazing service. If you ever wanted to do any sort of CAD design, always been a bit scared because you're put off by the price of licensing like big expensive software, or just that entry point of how do you start, knifeprint.com is the place to go to. Super, super simple way to design knives. They've got special CAD tools specific for knife making. So you can design that knife. You can hit a render button and it'll show you exactly what it looks like in 3D. You can spin it around and make it look all fancy. But then you can press a print button and they'll cut it out for you. They'll either laser jet it or water jet it for you. And they'll send it by the post. Knifeprint.com. Go take a look. Really great education center on it as well. So if you don't know what you're doing, they'll talk you right through the process. Super, super simple. Go take a look. Knifeprint.com. Okay, let's have a look. Simple work. Who wants to take that one?
I want to take this one from Corey Eck.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, sorry. You missed one. Yes, yeah.
Corey Eck says, got a question for you fine gentlemen. I was on a knife maker's website and he was
he said the guy's name and I took guy's name out.
He was on a specific knife maker's website and he was saying carbon steel is absolutely not to be used for culinary knives and only stainless should be. I'd like to hear your opinion on the matter. Thanks for the entertainment, enthusiasm, and knowledge you share with us all every week. Keep up the great work.
Guy seems like a hot take machine, huh?
Yeah.
He does, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys think about carbon steel?
I mean,
for culinary knives.
First steel for culinary knives is carbon steel. Yeah, it's like the oldest shit in the world. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Carbon steel has been used for culinary knives, and it's stainless. What is it? I think it was in the 40s or something like that when the first stainless alloy was used. And whether or not it was actually good for any kind of cutting tool, who even fucking knows?
But if you want a knife that needs to be regularly sharpened, carbon steel would certainly beat a stainless steel knife for that. Far easier to sharpen. The first knives that I made were carbon steel, and I'd say, less and less now. But when I was doing sort of one-off jobs, I'd say it was about 50-50, people wanting carbon steel or stainless steel. It's less now because I'm doing sort of bigger sort of restaurant stuff. But clearly this guy personally doesn't like carbon steel, so he's come up with this big story of they should never be used for culinary knives.
Yeah. It is amazing how they kind of wrap themselves around a statement. It's just like, who care? I mean, if you want to use, if somebody wants to, personally, I mean, we probably do, I would say 97% stainless steel. I like stainless steel, but I'm not going to tell, you can have whatever you want. I mean, I don't really, you should be comfortable with what you have. And a lot of people only use carbon. I know people say, I'm a carbon steel person. I only use carbon steel. Okay, great. God bless you. I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. That's for sure. That's not the horse I want to. Never mind. I don't know what I was going to say. Horse I want to die on. I don't know why I fucking. I think it's the mountain you want.
Horse you want to back.
Yeah, right.
I the only thing I could imagine that has this guy being so kind of absolutist about this is that because carbon steel, corrodes much easier than the stainless steel knife. Stainless steel will still corrode if not properly taken care of. That's why it's called stainless. Not stain impervious, right? And so I think
there's a brand name for you, stain impervious.
Stain impervious. I think, it's like telling people they shouldn't cook with cast iron because it might rust. Like, the reason it might rust is because you're a fucking idiot and you're not taking care of it. And it's the same. That's it. Basically, it's the same thing with carbon steel. And so it sounds like that guy is just fucking lazy and he's had problems with carbon steel in the past. And so he doesn't want to use it anymore. But the reality is that carbon steel is very, very easy to take care of. But you have to take care of it like you would take care of your cast iron pan, right? You have to have kind of a relationship around it. And you could even create a ritual around the cleaning it. But honestly, like, it takes a minute to clean a carbon steel knife and then put it away. I don't know what the problem is for so many people who are just like, I hate carbon steel because it rusts. And it's like, you hate it because you're lazy.
Well, here's
what the problem is.
Here's the also, we need to like globalize this situation. There are people who are vegans. I mean, they're unreasonable too. Be honest with you.
Sure.
So it's like, I know some real unreasonable vegans, and they are ridiculous. And they say some things that are crazy. You can't eat white sugar because it's with the bones of animals. And that's why, veganism, you don't eat white sugar because that bleaching is with bones of animals. And they don't fuck with that white sugar, man. Fuck with that white sugar. And they don't fuck with the honey because the bees are being, oppressed or something.
Milking the bees.
You can't be milking them bees, So, vegans are unreasonable too. This guy's obviously a knife vegan. He's unreasonable.
Oh, he's a knife Karen.
He's a vegan. He's a knife vegan. He doesn't believe in that. He believes in absolutes, No. Fuck him. Yeah. I mean, fine. I usually, when somebody says something like that, they're either trying to be crazy or they don't know.
They need attention.
Or they're not old enough to be like, it's all right. You have whatever you want. You want an aluminum knife? Have at it,
Well, they've heard somebody say something similar and they've just taken to the extreme.
I don't understand why people have to like make these absolutes all the time. It's just like, just seems you're just looking for problems. But,
the world we live in, everything's binary, yes or no. There's no in betweens.
Nice.
Anyway, let me tell you about somewhere. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. They've got everything you need. One-stop shop for knife makers. Steel, belts, handle materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. They're also the Canadian distributor for combat abrasives. They also sell Rhino Wet and Rhino Stick and everything else you need. Go take a look. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Also deal on belts, so if you buy 10, you get one free and all that kind of stuff. Go take a look. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com.
Did you know that Maritime Knife Supply is the Canadian distributor of Broadbeck Ironworks grinders?
Really? Oh, I didn't know.
And right now, oh, wow, I mean, well, shit. As this episode airs, the sale will have ended. So sorry, suckers. You might have missed the Blade Show sale. But keep your eyes peeled because there is another Blade Show coming up soon. They'll probably be doing something special for that. But right now, if you go to BroadbackIronworks.com and you put in Knife Talk 200, you can get $200 off any grinder package, which is the Max, the Premium, or the Mega. And if you put in Knife Talk 100... that'll save you $100 on the sharpening system, the surface grinder, and the leather sewing machines. And they have all kinds of new attachments coming out. Actually, Jeff was referencing Radius Platins earlier. They have a new 36-inch Radius Platin. They have a new beveling jig. They got all kinds of new stuff coming out all the time. So go check them out. Again, BroadbackIronworks.com.
Look at that. Seamless. Cool. We do more questions? Do you want to?
Yeah, if you guys want to look down the list and pick a question that jumps out at you, and I'll have a quick look too. Okay, Thirsty Work Industries. Thirsty Work Industries. Question for you, gentlemen. Can you take a moment and explain why certain knife steels are more common for certain knife applications? For example, why a 1084 or 15N20 the staple for Mosaic Damascus? Why not use ATCRV2 and 52100? Or why is W2 so typically used in Sanmai instead of D2 or 1075? Really good question. That was Thirsty Work Industries. Yeah, certain knife steels are commonly used for certain things. Morocco, why do we always see 1084 and 15N20 used for Damascus, for example?
Yeah, so you typically see the 10 series. So it could be 1075, 1080, 1084, 1085, 1095 are typically used with 15N20. And that is because they forge in a similar range and move at a similar rate. And they heat treat in a similar range as well. So they play really nicely together. Now, if you put 15N20 with, say, I've done Crew Forge V. Now it's common. There are makers who use Crew Forge V commonly in their Damascus, but an example of how it forges differently. I made a Sanmai, and the Crew Forge V was the edge, and then it was 1080 and 15N20 Damascus on the outside. Now it all started as one regular shaped kind of rectangular bar of steel, but as I started to forge it out, the Crew Forge V moves so much slower that the rest of the steel was kind of spilling. It was like if you had a hamburger and you just, instead of taking nice gentle bites, you just smash down and everything squished out the back, right? So that soft, or not the softer steel, but the 1080 and the 15N20 cladding was moving way faster than the Crew Forge V. It's difficult to work with when it comes to forging, especially if you're using it for an edge material. And I think it also depends. Like I was using a forging press, and that will play also a role in how that material moves. Another element I was just talking about was like the heat treating qualities. So you don't necessarily want to use like 15N20 with 52100 because they don't really. You can kind of heat treat them in the similar range, but really you would want to heat treat for one over the other because they are different enough. And then when it comes to W2, he says Sanmai, but I'm guessing that he actually means for Hamones. And to real quick, Hamone is when you heat treat some steel so that portion of the blade, typically along the spine, is soft, while the edge stays tough. It's a technique and tradition that comes from Japanese knife and sword making. And so W2 is typically used because it is a shallower hardening steel. So that means that you have to get it from the austenitic temperature of like 1475 to below 900 degrees in about 1 second to nail the heat treat. Which is really tricky to do, and that's why you want to use a faster quenching oil, like a fit of like a Parks 50 or something like that. You wouldn't want to use canola oil or AAA or other heat quenching oils. You would need a faster oil because you'd need that seal to come down faster. D2 doesn't do that. 1075 possibly could do that, which are some of the other steels that he's asking about in that same question. But especially D2 has a high chromium content, and part of the idea of adding chrome to steels like 5200, ADCR V2, Crewforge V all have chrome in them, as well as the D2, and that helps actually make it a deeper hardening steel, so you have a much larger window to get the blade down below that temp, that kind of like that austenite or the hardening nose, the perlite nose. And so instead of having just 1 second, you have like fucking 20 or 30 seconds to get it down below. You have lots of time, lots and lots of time. But part of the reason that W2 gets that really nice hormone is because typically when you paint on the clay along the spine, that portion of the steel is kind of insulated from any kind of oil or quenchant that you might be using. And so the exposed steel, which is along the edge, quenches faster within that ideal range, that time span, versus the spine material. And because the spine material doesn't, it transforms into a different structure. It doesn't transform into martensite, transforms into perlite and other kind of mixtures of various structures on the blade, in the steel.
So
what do you think, Jeff?
So, Craig, in summation, what are you saying?
Just because. So I've got 2 4-year-olds, so I say this a lot these days. Just because.
Or you could say, mind your business. Mind your own business.
Yeah. None of your fucking business.
My favorite is actually to throw it back at them. I'll say, well, yeah, what do you think? And then they have to stop and think about it. And then while they're thinking about it, I can go on with whatever I was already doing.
The old, that's the old answer question with a question.
Yeah.
Exactly. Go. Yeah. Right. Let's call it a day. Thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you again next Monday, where we have something very special to announce.
You're teasing this fucker out completely.
Stay tuned. there we go.
I apologize. I've been in a weird mood today. Real weird mood.
Me too. It's brightened me up. All of a sudden I'm laughing.
That's good.
It's done the job. I got to while you were talking, I got to reject a big ask. Somebody was asking me to help someone, and I had to reject them. So,
You heartless bastard.
Yep. Rejection is a tough pill to swallow. Have you guys been watching anything lately?
Ted Lasso's back.
Oh, I hear it's good.
The first two seasons were brilliant. This first episode that I saw the other day, it wasn't the best. Maybe I was just in a bad mood. I don't know. But what else have you been watching? Something called Marcella, which you probably don't get in the US. It's like a British cop drama kind of thing, which is good. That's pretty much it, really.
Have you been watching anything, Mareko?
Yeah, I've been watching Last Kingdom with my wife. It's like a Viking kind of show. And we're on the 4th season of 5. We're almost done with it. We are excited, though, to see the new Ted Lasso. And I'm trying to think what else we got coming up. Oh, we watched the Shadow and Bone series on Netflix. That was kind of interesting. It's kind of like a magical world. I don't know how to describe it. But anyways, it's cool. That's what we've been watching.
I finally have something to suggest. My friend Bree Pettis, we talk about him all the time. I talk about him all the time. He's the owner of Bantam Tools. He was they did a documentary on the 3D printing game in the 2000s. And he's
the guy from MakerBot. Yeah,
he created MakerBot, which
was the first consumer grade 3D printer.
And so this documentary is called Print the Legend. And Bree is It's a very interesting documentary about like these 3D printer companies and stuff like that. And I just interviewed him on Full Blast, and he and I are going to do something together pretty soon, which is pretty cool. So that's definitely interesting to watch, especially considering it. Now 3D printers are like, everyone's got a 3D printer.
Sure.
Except for me. Except for, you know, other than that.
There's one for $30 on Amazon at the moment, a 3D printer.
It's crazy.
Even if you've never used one, it's worth getting one just to sort of try and understand how they work and, you know.
I mean, I'm interested in them. I do. Like,
yeah, and I think especially with kids as well. It's great because you can, you know, make little shitty little things for them. But for them to sort of understand how what it is and how it works, right. I think it's quite cool.
Well, he had go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say he had some really. It's really interesting his perspective. If you watch the documentary was very like years ago, you said to me that it wasn't you or somebody told me it wasn't very flattering towards Bree, and it just seemed like the people they were interviewing were very these petty assholes, and it just seemed ridiculous that these people were just bitching about the workplace. You know, it's like lame. But I thought it was really interesting, and he's a really cool guy. But it's interesting because now he went from 3D printing, which is, you know, you're adding material, to now he has a desktop CNC company where you're taking away material, which is kind of
additive to reductive.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. Yeah. We talked about that for a while.
Last week you were talking about the Chris Rock
special
Outrage. I did watch that.
What did you think?
I thought it was good. It was very funny. While I was cleaning out the razor clams last night, I was watching that, and then I followed that with a documentary about Desmond Tutu and his relationship, like his friendship with the Dalai Lama, and it's called Mission Joy, which was actually pretty good and interesting to learn about some of the history of those guys and about apartheid and the Dalai Lama, because there's stuff I vaguely am familiar with, but I don't really know, and I felt like I was learning a lot of interesting things. And yeah, it was good.
What did you think of Chris Rock? What he said about Will Smith?
I thought it was great.
It was funny. He beat the brakes off him. It wasn't. I mean, it was like more of like a beating than it was a joking.
Yeah. No, I thought. I don't know. I thought it was very funny. I thought it was good and accurate. And I think it was like you said last week. I think it was good that he held on to it for so long, so that he could do this special. And I don't know if that's originally his idea around doing it or not really speaking about all that. But it was good. It's definitely worth watching. It's funny.
One thing, and just only for the time, the timing of it all, is the World Baseball Classic is over. It's it was an awesome experience because it was all these different countries playing in a baseball tournament. And there was Japan, who won the whole thing, the United States, and all these Latin American countries. And then the biggest joke of them all was the uniforms of Great Britain. Did you hear about those, Craig?
The uniforms of
Great Britain. They just took the font from, like, Microsoft Word and put Great Britain on a fucking shirt. And they were beating the brakes off the Great Britain team because the shirts were so bad. It was like Microsoft Word font.
Baseball.
It was like unbelievable. But the cool thing was I didn't get to watch it because I don't have that channel. But the most amazing part was, and this is why baseball is so great. So the American team was a lot of Americans, and then a lot of Major League Baseball players were playing for the. Am I wrong? It's like a bad font, right?
That's hilarious.
So I mean, Great Britain got, you know, shit canned right off the bat. But the only part was they got embarrassed because they were just like, what kind of fucking shirt is that? It's like, it's like terrible. But the amazing thing is at the end, one of there's a team called the Angels in California, and there's two guys on the team who are amazing. One is Shohei Ohtani, who is a Japanese phenom. He's considered one of the best baseball players because he's an incredible pitcher and he's an incredible hitter. It's like a unicorn situation. You don't get them both. And then Mike Trout, who's also awesome. So the last out of the last inning of the last game for the championship was Shohei Ohtani was pitching against Mike Trout. their teammates on the Angels, but in for the World Baseball Classic. Shohei Ohtani's for Japan, Mike Trout's for the United States, and he struck Mike Trout out, and it was this monstrous, dramatic thing because these guys are going to play together this season. And it was just kind of a neat, it was just one of the things about baseball. Everyone was like trying to build a drama up about these two teammates are going to be, you know, this is the last it. This is it for all the marbles is these two teammates against each other. So that went well.
Yeah, baseball talk. Okay, I've just seen that shirt. Yeah,
it's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Even the spacing between the letters is just what? Yeah.
But what else? That's it. Oh, my kid playing fucking football. My kid made the varsity football team. She decided in the late winter that she wanted to play varsity, so she joined the track team to get in shape for varsity football. She watched a couple YouTube videos on how to be a center. She made through two cuts, and now she's the starting center on this goddamn football team. And we went to a game last night, and we had a fucking blast, and they destroyed. They were awesome. So my kid's a jock. What can you do?
What can you do?
Nice.
There you go.
Right, okay, let's call it a day. We shall speak to you all again next week with our big, big news. Bye for now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big.